personal sense of merging with Krishna, becoming one with Krishna, being God, any of these other misconceptions, which is simply another form of Maya. It's simply another form of illusion. It's another way of overlording. In other words, you know, trying to deny the existence of God didn't really work very well. That caused unhappiness, so maybe I'll try being God. Maybe that will work better. So that's another. And in fact, this impersonalism, sometimes impersonalism can be very subtle, and it can actually be somewhat attractive, and it's considered, you know, one of the last snares of nescience, as Prabhupada said. One of our one of the ways that Maya can get us at the end in this very lofty way of impersonal philosophy. There's a real, I just thought of this, there's a very interesting passage in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita when, who's the main character? Gopal or? Gopal Kumar. Anyway, he's traveling, you know, of course he's going through all the different planetary systems and different planets and the heavenly planets and the planets of, you know, all the different incarnations. And at one point, he's traveling through the Brahma Jyoti, if anybody remembers that. And actually, Sanatana Goswami explains in a way that I never really heard before that attraction that's there, that there actually is some attraction, you know, to that idea of just being, just existing, you know, just spiritual existence, that there actually was some attraction, and he had to quickly sort of pull himself away from that, you know, not be caught by that. No, that's not the goal. That's not what I want. So sometimes it's hard to understand, but yeah, there is some attraction there. But, you know, it is difficult philosophically, I think, for devotees to really wrap our minds around impersonalism, because actually it doesn't make sense. I remember in one of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purports, there was a question is why is that it's very difficult to understand Mayavadi philosophy. He said, of course it's difficult because it doesn't make any sense, you know, because it's not true. For one who is actually trying to find the truth, it doesn't add up to us. So at any rate, that's not what we're interested in. We're not interested in that type of uniting or being with Krishna, or not to become one in that sense. In fact, it's described that there's a progressive understanding of this idea of oneness. It's described in the 15th chapter of the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that there's a progressive understanding of oneness. And this is in the verses around 60 to 65. First, there's the bhavadvaita, which means that one understands cause and effect as being non-different from Krishna, which is somewhat of an impersonal understanding. Then there's kriyadvaitam, when one's activities become one with Krishna. And then dravyadvaita, when one's interests are one with Krishna. So this is an important concept. This dravyadvaita means a oneness of interest with the Lord. This is what the devotee is striving for. Not that we become one in identity, one in quantity, one in quality with God, but one in interest. In other words, what God's desires are our desires. What he wants is what we want. You know, so that's a goal. We're not necessarily there yet, but that's certainly the goal. That's the desire of the devotee. So that particular verse in the Bhagavatam speaks of the real self-interest of the living entity. And so being non-separate from Krishna means that we do have no separate interest. There's another verse in the 6th canto that describes this. 6.16.57 says, when a living entity, thinking himself different from me, forgets his spiritual identity of qualitative oneness, not quantitative, but qualitative oneness with me in eternity, knowledge, and bliss, his material conditional life begins. In other words, instead of identifying his interest with mine, he becomes interested in his bodily expansions, like his wife, children, and material possessions. In this way, by the influence of his actions, one body comes from another, and after one's death, another death takes place. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto said, Nate vidu svartagatim hi vishnum, that the materialists do not know that their real interest is service to Vishnu. So, this is the position of the devotee. Devotee is looking out for his self-interest. It is not that we are not, But we know what our real self-interest is, because first one has to know what is the self. If one doesn't have a clear idea of the self, then how can one understand his self-interest? And so that's why the very first thing that we learn is that we're not the body, that we are the spirit soul. So first we have to understand that we are the soul, not the body. And not only do we have to intellectually understand that, but we have to realize that and practice it on a day-to-day basis, which is sometimes more difficult. You know, because the more that we act on that platform, on the spiritual platform, not on the bodily platform, the deeper that realization comes about. So we understand, first of all, who the self, and not just that the self is something spiritual, or a spiritual energy or spiritual essence, but the self is also not only part and parcel of Krishna, but eternal servant of Krishna. So with that understanding of the self as the eternal servant of Krishna, then one takes up the actual process of self-realization. And then one can act in one's self-interest. So I wanted to read this. It's an interesting passage. This is in Vishwanath's commentaries on the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of Brahma's prayers to Lord Krishna. And it's a very nice, a very interesting discussion about what is the real self-interest of the living entity. So first of all, King Parikshit asks a question. This is after the pastime, and we know that Krishna, more or less, Brahma tried to fool Krishna by stealing the cowherd boys and the cows. And of course, Krishna expanded himself as the cowherd boys and the cows. And Lord Brahma was completely bewildered, because here they still were, and then they had forearm forms, and so at the end he's offering his prayers. So at the end of these prayers, King Parikshit said, "O Brahman, how could the coward women have developed for Krishna, someone else's son, such unprecedented pure love, love they never felt even for their own children?" And of course, during that year of time that Krishna had expanded himself as the cows and the coward boys, the cows and the mothers, the gopis, had the opportunity of having Krishna as their own son. So he totally fulfilled that desire of theirs in the Vatsalya Rasa, because of course they already related to Krishna as mothers, but now they got the opportunity to actually have Krishna as their son. And they felt greater love for their children than they ever did before, because of course now their son was actually Krishna. So why is this, is the question. How would they feel even greater love for Krishna than they would their own children? Because naturally, in the material world, we consider, in fact, Prabhupada gives that as the epitome of love. The closest thing to spiritual love, Prabhupada said, is the love between a mother and child. So we can get some understanding of the depth and the selflessness of that relationship. So Shukadeva Goswami said, "O King, for every created being, the dearmost thing is certainly his own self. The dearness of everything else, children, wealth, and so on, is due only to the dearness of the self. Indeed, for persons who think the body is the self, those things whose importance lies only in the relation of the body are never as dear. Let me get that right. Lies only in the relation of the body are never as dear as the body itself. If a person comes to the stage of considering the body mine instead of me, he will certainly not consider the body as dear as his own self." In other words, if he understands my body, who's the person who's the owner of the body? So therefore, that person, the self, who is the owner of the body, is more dear than the body. I think that's the logic here. "After all, even as the body is growing old and useless, one desires to continue living and remain strong. Therefore, it is his own self that is most dear to every embodied living being, and is simply for the satisfaction of this self that the whole material creation of moving and non-moving entities exists. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency." Now, this is Vishwanath's purport now. This verse establishes the conclusion of the discussion. When one sees the truth, he realizes that the individual spirit soul is only an intermediate object of love. The final, highest object of love is Sri Krishna alone. Brahma said, "Krishna is the soul of the universe and the supersoul present in the hearts of all conditioned souls. A person loves children and other persons because they bring pleasure to his own material body. In the same way, a person loves his own material body because it brings pleasure to himself, the spirit soul. Also, in the same way, a person loves his true self, his spiritual identity, because he brings pleasure to the super soul. The super soul is Sri Krishna, whose spiritual form is perfect and complete. The conclusion is that because Krishna is the highest object of love, the greatest love is felt for him. Thus, the Vraja Gopis love Krishna even more than they love their own sons. Everybody got that? Okay. It's kind of an intricate philosophical argument, you know, the stages, how because we have, you know, different degrees of self-awareness and self-interest, they become progressively higher to the point where the interest of the spirit soul itself is most fulfilled in relationship with Krishna, who is the super soul or the super self, and ultimately Krishna. And therefore, the soul itself is most satisfied when it's giving pleasure to Krishna. Just in the same way that the body is satisfied when it gives pleasure to the soul, the senses are satisfied when they give pleasure to the body. So you have this progressive stage where ultimately you reach the highest level of giving pleasure to Krishna, and that gives complete satisfaction to the living entity. Okay. So what does it look like? What does it mean if our interest is identical with Krishna's, if we have the same interest? I think that we would see ourselves as representative of Krishna's or emissaries of Krishna. In other words, the pure devotee is thinking, what is Krishna's interest? What does Krishna want? Therefore, I try to fulfill that. So the spiritual master and the acharyas, they come to this earth to fulfill the interest, the desire, and the pastimes of Krishna. So we know Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, you know, to this material world to give Krishna consciousness to the suffering living entities. He came to give the chanting of the holy name specifically as the Yuga Dharma, to bring about an end to the suffering of the conditioned souls. So that's God's desire. That's Krishna's desire, that every living entity becomes free from material misconceptions of life, takes up the chanting of the holy name, and goes back home, back to Godhead. Therefore, if we are acting without self-interest, or our self-interest is identical with the interest of God's, that is what we do. And so we can see, when a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada comes, his activity is to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, and of course fulfill the desire of his spiritual master, who is also fulfilling the desires of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, to become pure, we have to start acting on the pure platform. It's not that somehow that we'll simply meditate or for some period of years, then all of a sudden we become pure, then we start acting like pure devotees. No, we have to begin the process. It's an active process. So when we act on the platform of purity, then we become purified. Then all the anartas and all of the material conceptions of life start to fade away, to melt away, and are purified in the fire of devotional service. So when we act in this way to fulfill the mission of Krishna, we are actually working, we are in our own self-interest by fulfilling the interests or the desires of the Lord. And we're also teaching, this Krishna conscious movement is teaching the conditioned souls how they can actually act in their own self-interest, in their real self-interest of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we attempt to give Krishna consciousness to everyone, for ourselves, for our own purification, and for the purification of others. Of course, the highest understanding and motivation is compassion, that this is done out of compassion for the suffering of living entities. But even if we don't fully feel that compassion, we understand that compassionate mood of the Lord and the compassionate mood of Srila Prabhupada and the acharyas. And by acting, you know, on their compassion and fulfilling their desires, then we become purified, and eventually we will also feel that compassionate nature and continue this process of Krishna consciousness. So I'll end at that point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any? Yes.
Hare Krishna. So if we were with Krishna at some point and then we fell, do you or does anyone know in what regard were we with Krishna? Like, was every soul in Goloka Vrindavan at some point? And then the second part of that question is, could it be predicted that we were going to fall because we are conditioned souls, or are falling stamped us as like eternally conditioned souls?
Well, thanks for a real easy question. It's very, very deep and very important, very interesting. My understanding, and there are different understandings, my understanding from Srila Prabhupada is that, yes, we were all eternal, associates with Krishna in the spiritual world. And at some point, we fell from that position due to our enviousness, due to the mis-exercise of our free will. Krishna gives us free will. We have minute free will because we have the same qualities as Krishna, and Krishna, you know, is a complete independent with complete free will, therefore we have a small part of that. So, because you could say, does Krishna know everything? Did he know that we were going to make that choice and fall? I don't really know. I'm not sure.
Yes, he knows everything.
What's that?
I mean, of course he knew. Of course he would know that.
But I think we need to make the distinction between sometimes there's a difference between, desire and sanction. So in other words, it's not that Krishna said, okay, that one's going to fall down. You know, he didn't want us to, obviously. You know, so Krishna sanctions the exercise of our free will, but he also feels compassionate and, you know, and sorry that we did that, and therefore he works to bring us back.
But we're inclined to feel that way. We are conditioned.
Somehow or another, yes, because apparently 25% of us fell into this material world and 75% had the intelligence to stay in the spiritual world. So we are part of that 25%. And it's hard to understand. I can't claim that I understand why did we fall. But Krishna Prabhupada, when he was really pressed on this, he would usually say something like, you know, better that you work to get out. You know, it's difficult to understand what time and place and history that we may have fallen in this material world. You know, but nevertheless, we did. And now our job is to get out of this material world and back to the spiritual world. It's a fascinating discussion, though. Yeah. Yes, Yamaraj Prabhu? Wait for the microphone.
I was reading the other night, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was speaking about what Matati was saying. And he was saying that, based on my understanding, what he was saying was that he said that if we're worried about how did we fall, that's showing some rebellious inclination. So, I remember years ago, I asked Ramaphosa Swami this. He says, like Prabhupada said, don't worry about it. We're here. So just try to get out of it, you know.
I think that's a good point. I think what we can understand, though, is that it was somehow or another our choice, you know, that we exercised our free will. So we can't blame Krishna that we're here, you know, but we can now take the help of Krishna and Guru and get back. Yeah. Trivikram Prabhu?
Also, I was...
Oh, go ahead.
One little point is that Lord...
You have the microphone.
Lord Chaitanya, he says somehow or other.
Somehow or another, fall in this material world.
So
yeah.
I mean, he knows how to work things.
Yeah.
What's important to note here is that took us millions, even billions of lifetimes to get to this human platform. Now we have this opportunity to get out.
Yeah.
So we should try to grasp it. If we become complacent, we will lose it again. And we have to do it for ourselves.
We're losing the microphone a little bit. Try to speak right. I think we're losing the battery.
You course, you have your subtle body there, but no, no.
Sort
no
of in suspended animation. Kind
so
of, yeah.
It seems like, you know, for 4,320,000,000 years, you know, you're in a
kind of a sleeping
dormant state. You know, yeah. So it seems like an impersonal setting there.
Yeah. It's, what's the last thing you said? It seems like.
It seems like that's an impersonal setting there. You know, you're not doing anything there, right? For 4,320,000,000 years.
Yeah, it's kind of a dormant state. Yeah. I have to, okay, well, let's take one more. I actually have to leave for another meeting, but Prabhu over here. Yeah.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that once who reaches my above never falls down again.
Right.
So if we were in the spiritual world, how we can get back here?
Yeah. You know, Prabhupada has discussed that, and he says, practically speaking, that one won't fall down. In other words, you've learned. You've learned your lesson. You came in this material world, you became purified, and now the chances are, you know, 99.9% or whatever, that you won't come back in this material world. But Prabhupada said that theoretically you could, because free will is always there. But generally speaking, we've learned. We've learned our lesson. You know.
And it's necessary that once you fall down from the spiritual world, you have to start from lower species of life? Like 800, 400,
1,000, 400? That's debatable. Sometimes, at one point, it says that one comes as Lord Brahma, you know, when it comes in the material world. So I've seen different things as far as where we start in that, in our first incarnation. Adi Dave and good friend.
And he said that each jiva that falls becomes a Brahma. I mean, he gets a universe. That's
yeah, I've heard that too.
Hey,
that
you want becomes a gift, Brahma. You want to lower it over here.
Yeah.
Take a universe. So yeah. Every one of us at one point had a universe. Now, what happened after that, I don't know.
Yeah.
My universe has shrunk a whole lot since then.
I don't know. I don't fully understand it, but I have heard that also. I should probably say that. Yeah. Pran Govinda? You got to go. Minute or so.
It's class. But jivas fall, I'm not going to talk because it's long.
Yeah, too long.
I want to repeat that what I understand from your this is the first time I heard after I was contemplating about Brahmaji's nice realization on the King Parikshit asking to Sukhdev Goswami that these unprecedented activities that unlimited gopi mothers draws their ultimate satisfaction, I should say, from the object of affection, not from their own child, but from somebody else's child, happen to known as Sri Krishna. So this is unprecedented. Mm. But then you have read so far what I understand. I want you to tell me if it is okay. That what I also read, I remember, I think Ridhananda Maharaj's translation, the self-centeredness and self-preservation is the first thing to love self. Mm-hmm. But the misidentification of the self as a body is the cause of problem. So that the self is identified as an eternal servant of Krishna, then self-centeredness and self-preservation for self-realization is the first thing required. Mm. But then further progression in the Bhakti Yoga, when he comes in contact with Paramatma, then his self-interest transformed to Paramatma's realization, Paramatma's satisfaction. It is higher comparative to previous. And then when he further progress and he come to realize of Bhagavan, then it culminates to the highest satisfaction by pleasing the Lord even for the self. That is supposed to be highest.
I think you said that better than I did. Thank you. That was a very good... very good synopsis of that. It's kind of a intricate philosophical progression.
Yeah, but it's required. Otherwise, why we are attracted to Krishna consciousness?
Right. Yeah, right.
Very nice.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, and there's something. I think it's an important concept because a lot of times, because we tend to be self-centered, of course, around the body. Usually, there's a natural resistance, thinking, "Well, is this in my self-interest to surrender?" Mm-hmm. And actually, it is. That, you know, that's what we're learning here, that our highest self-interest actually is to surrender to Krishna. You know, it's the best thing we can do.
Yes. Thank you. Nice class.
Thank you very much. We should probably end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.